Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Good evening, AfterBuzzers. Welcome to another exciting, enticing, special episode of House of Cards Season 3, Episode 3. I am your host, Peg Arad, joined by...
Hi there, I am Quinn Skillion. You can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillion.
I'm Julian Dujaric. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and Tumblr and MySpace and all that. Ooh. At Julian Dujaric. I still do have a MySpace. At Julian Dujaric.
Wow.
Sustained power.
And I am Autumn Chiklis. You can only find me, unfortunately, on Twitter and Instagram at Autumn Chiklis.
And I'm Peg Arad. You can find me on Twitter at Peg Arad. Guys.
Whoa, beans.
Shoot. This episode.
Yeah.
First impressions.
It was awesome. I mean, like, we basically spent the entire episode at dinner. Mm-hmm. It was almost a bottle episode with a couple outlying things here and there. But it was heavy, heavy stuff.
Very, very tense. That's the most tense dinner. I don't ever want to go to a dinner like that ever in my life. I don't know. It's very tense for me.
It was fun to see some, it was the first time in a while we've actually dealt with international relations with people outside of the White House. They've discussed international relations with people within the United States.
In
but
the
it
bubble.
Was the first time in a while, yeah, in the bubble, but it's the first time in a while we've seen them interact with other leaders in that way and so candidly in places and so passive aggressively in others. So yeah. That was fun.
Yeah,
that
so we really have fun. President Petrov coming to visit the White House, and about 15 minutes before he shows up, Frank is talking to Bob about AmWorks. So that just shows, like, how important that issue is for him. It's like, you have this huge event coming up. This president's coming to see you, but you're, like, still wanting to push your agenda. And he shows up and, just so menacing from, like, the get-go, right? He's just...
Oh, yeah. And he just wasn't falling for any of Frank's little charms, yeah. You know? Frank was... He gave him that surfboard with the... You remember? With, like, the Beatles in the back of the USSR.
Yeah.
And, like, he was just like, oh, thanks. Like, you could tell, like, he didn't care at all.
Yeah, and it's, like, straight from the beginning, he has this intimidation game. You know, he's like, this is the first time at the White House, but it's the third U.S. president. Like... Kind of like, I'm going to be here for a while. You presidents come and go, but I'm like the Russian president that's here today.
Yeah, he was definitely trying to make it clear, like, I'm in charge here. Like, what I say goes, pretty much.
Well, especially since, as far, they had that whole conversation about, oh, you're out in 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
But he also mentions, you and I both know that you're going to run. Or, like, let's be honest, you're going to run, which was really, really fun to have him. Kind of toss that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to have him call out, Petrov call out Frank in that way was really interesting. And what was even more interesting to me is how much restraint was
both
shown.
Of them.
Well, both of them, but just really just because we, I guess because Frank tends to break the fourth wall a lot and he talks to us and we get inside his mind. But to see the restraint that he shows in the midst of what is a really tense, not only that specific conversation, but throughout the entire episode, is just to see his restraint, the restraint that he showed is really impressive to me anyway.
Yeah. And he's coming off already saying no from the beginning, you know, so we know that Frank has a lot of
buttering
up to do, if you will. So then we cut to Catherine and Claire, and they're meeting with the Israel and Palestine ambassador.
Right. So Claire has gotten the ambassador.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, we saw it in the previous episode as she was running, and then all of a sudden she's in it, and she's.
Yeah, I was wondering, did Frank just override and appoint her, or did he give her a revote?
No, I think they called different senators, right? They called different representatives and kind of they schmoozed and kind of smoothed that over. And she was calling, too. I think we saw that in the previous episode.
Yeah, but then we kind of jumped.
That was from the first election, which she lost.
At the very end of episode two, she says, you know, I want you to fix this. And then, boom, episode three, she's ambassador. I wasn't really sure if that was some kind of presidential override or if she actually did end up getting
I'd have to rewatch it because there was a minute there where I went, did I skip that?
That's what I thought. Yeah. I was a little concerned. What did I miss?
Like, wait a minute. Because they definitely plunge you right into this episode, and it almost feels like you skipped over.
Yeah, definitely some time has gone by, because when they were talking about I think it was something where Claire was like, you've had a month to decide. So we know that sometimes I can't remember exactly which decision that was. That was thanks. Anyway, yeah.
So during that meeting that Catherine and Claire are both in, everybody keeps referring to the president as your husband. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're not addressing him as Mr. President. And they keep talking to Claire, thinking, you know, maybe if we talk to her, this will all kind of get to his ear in pillow talk or something. And that starts to bother her, because we have Catherine, who is the Secretary of State, right? Nobody's actually addressing her, and this kind of bothers Claire.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that she wants to be treated as the ambassador, mm-hmm. not as the, you know, the president's wife. And also, she knew that she really wasn't the one who they were supposed to be addressing. They were supposed to be addressing mm-hmm. Kathy.
Right.
And I think that was making her really uncomfortable, because she's not trying to get on Kathy's bad side, and she wants to make sure that, you know, that they're you know, on the same team, and that, you know, that she's not going to have this, like, weird kind of favoritism over her. And I think that Claire was really, really nervous about coming off that way.
Yeah, but the last thing that she wants to do is make Kathy feel like she's an opponent mm-hmm. and not an ally. And the best way to make her feel like she's an opponent is to be the center of attention and being addressed, because she is the wife of the president, instead of the person who they really should be going through, which is Kathy herself, especially since Kathy is so experienced and so good at what she does, that to kind of jump over her to talk to Claire, who is very fresh, can feel like an insult. And what's lovely is that Claire, the princess, who, you know, I adore, was able to see that was going to be an issue before it actually got there, and had the foresight to go, hey, I do not want to make not only an enemy here, but I want us to be on, like, tight, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, also, I don't know if you guys feel this way, whenever Kathy's around, I'm like, okay, we're good. Like, as a viewer, I trust her.
Yeah.
She's so smart, and I think that she's She's in the White House for the right reasons. You don't really see her doing a lot of duplicitous things like you see with a lot of other characters. She just seems to kind of just be like a wonderfully smart, good person.
Wasn't she integral in the president's impeachment, though?
Well, yeah, but yeah, I mean, I'm a couple other characters were as well, like Heather Dunbar, and
I mean,
I love Heather Dunbar too. She's like just badass. She's such a badass.
Yeah. She is.
I guess in this world, when you talk about, I guess because you said, you know, we don't see her do anything kind of manipulative and duplicitous, immediately my mind jumped to that, but I went, I mean, if we're going to call out every person ever going to do something, that's a little bit against.
I guess, comparatively, she seems all right.
Yeah, I know.
And I really trust her.
I'm sure there's like one what's her face? What's her face who resigned because she was so damn good? She's like the one person who never did anything wrong.
I know. I can't remember
her name right now.
Please comment below.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about? Yeah. Let us know.
So Claire apologizes to Catherine for kind of cutting her off. And I feel like she wants to make her own. She doesn't want to be just known as the First Lady. She wants to be known as somebody who's actually taking this UN ambassador role seriously. She wants to make her own stride. She wants to be known for her work in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it's really, what's the word I'm looking for? Sweet of her, I guess, to be caring of what Catherine's position is there. What do you think?
Do you think it's sweet or do you think it's ambitious? I mean, she's very clear. Like, she wants to be the president. She wants to lead the world, you know?
Yeah.
Or at least she wants to have, like, a really... She loves power almost as much or maybe even more than Frank does. And I don't know that it's necessarily... Yes, I think it is sweet if that were her motivation, but I don't think that's her motivation. I think
I think it's maybe
a little bit of both, because
Claire
has
no friends. That she craves a connection with somebody. I think she does.
She definitely respects her, because later on we see that when she's talking to Frank on the phone, and Frank says something about how his meeting or whatever was going, and she says, why don't we loop in Catherine on this phone call? And he's like, oh, I'll just brush it up, you know, tomorrow. And she's like, no, I think it's really important that she knows that we're not going around her. Mm-hmm. So she's really going that extra step to kind of make her feel...
But I don't know. I don't think that necessarily was about making her feel in the loop. Or it was to make her feel in the loop, but I think that was less sweet and that and more about, listen, we can't let anyone think that it's just the two of us without having anyone in. Because if the two of us are talking and no one else is in on it, then it starts to look suspicious, which it totally would. It absolutely would. I do agree that I think she craves some form of human connection, because she is a human. not just the goddess that I put her out to be. But she's a robot. Yeah, seriously, right? But she definitely is a human, and we see later in the episode that she does crave some kind of female companionship or a friend of any sort.
It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
But there's definitely an element to her that is still plotting and still has her own well-being in mind. So I think a friend would be a nice addition or benefit. Ultimately, she's
ambitious. Underwears are always playing some kind of game.
Calculated. Then we cut to Douglas Stamper. This storyline, if they could just cut it out, I wouldn't miss it at all. I'm sorry.
Does it make you sad?
I just don't see it. It's like
Beating a dead horse.
There we go. Beating a dead horse. So he meets with that junior congressman from Hawaii who wants to pay him $220,000, which is way over the cap for that job. And he thinks that Frank is behind it.
Because it's just a little bit too good to be true.
It's too good to be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway,
it doesn't really add any value to the storyline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Maybe they just needed to fill time. I don't know.
I think they're leading to something. I definitely think they're leading to something, because these writers are so detailed, and everything that they plant is a plant. So I feel like there has to be a reason that they're giving Stamper such a build up, and it's, in my opinion, because he's going to be a very integral part of the inevitable downfall, I think.
Yeah, no, I'll give, especially since we didn't see so much of Doug this episode, I'm willing to give it a couple minutes here and there, because I think we are leading up to something really cool. And also, I think if we missed him, I would be nervous about, where's Doug? Why didn't we see Doug? What's Doug up to? So it's nice to check in, just to be like, okay, cool, I know what's going on.
Yeah.
All my bases are covered, and I've got it. Cool. Yeah.
Then we cut back to Petrov, and they are talking about the whole surfing thing. And he comes and he brings out this artistic surfboard with all the sketches and stuff.
Yeah.
And he says something about having Claire come to Russia or somewhere to come try out, like, because
Petrov is newly divorced.
Yes,
so he's kind of become like a kind of a. I don't know.
A bachelor.
Yeah, an eligible bachelor, and he seems to really be living it up Russian style over there.
And he says, come, because the water is cold and the women are hot. And he low blow says, Claire might like it because there's a lot of artists over there. And I was like,
Just say that. Such a big dig. Yeah, that was something that I was like on my chair like, yes, Petrov! I don't know why. Like, it just elicited just like elation in me that he would say something like that. And again, like seeing this man, like, I don't know how, I guess that's why he's the president, because I wouldn't be able to contain my anger if someone said that about someone I was dating or someone even I loved, you know, just the dig at me like that.
It's just a little jazz. Just a little jazz.
Just a little jazz.
Push.
Yeah.
But he just keeps it together, man. That Frank Underwood, he's my hero.
Is he really?
He's my
cool,
deity.
Calm and collected.
Claire's kind
more
of
so
mine,
than my hero. I worship him. I'm not as ambitious as he is, or hopefully not as willing to kind of forego morals, but
yeah, you're gonna sabotage this panel sometime. Is that what's gonna happen?
I'm planting my own seeds. I think like the restraint that he's showing is just admirable.
Yeah,
in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
I think there's a number of things. It's definitely admirable that he's I wouldn't use the term admirable. I think it's very frank of him. The reason he has gotten to the place that he has gotten is because he remains so calm under pressure. Mm-hmm. And of course, every politician needs to have that calm, cool, collected nature about them. That being said, a lot of that also stems from the same kind of place in him that makes him so cold and makes him so calculatingly manipulative. Mm. One could argue that all politicians are that way. I wouldn't necessarily say so. So it's interesting, because when you see things like that with Frank, yes, it makes him a good leader, but it also makes him... The same thing that makes him a good leader can make him a bad person mm-hmm. and leader at the same time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of interconnected.
Yeah, it's a really slippery slope to kind of... You may lose a little bit of your moral direction, your moral compass, because you're looking to get ahead.
I think they...
He's a murderer.
I think they like to kind of
he's
use...
He's a survivor.
Yeah, I think they kind of like to use Frank's personality as kind of like... an allegory to the political system as a whole. You know, when people are heartless, things get done, and when people try to defer and, you know, take care of people, it's a little bit harder to kind of push your agenda through and make sure that things are, make sure that you're getting listened to and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of the takeaway there.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the greatest good for the greatest number. But at a certain point, with Frank in particular, you have to wonder, or I guess not wonder, because he pretty much says it, it's less about the greatest good for the greatest number, and it's more about the greatest good for him.
Mm.
So
yeah,
I think we're
speaking the same language over here.
I think we all are. I think we're all in agreement.
Let's talk about Russia.
So Petrov is here. Frank knows that if he was going to be an absolute no to this whole peace resolution thing, he would have just said so over the phone. Mm-hmm. Why fly all the way here? So Frank knows that there's some pursuing that he can do. He knows that there's, you know, something he can possibly do to change
his mind.
You
don't show up to dinner without an appetite.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I love that. Petrov says there's nothing to gain from the Middle East.
And nothing to gain from working with America.
Right. Because monetarily, if there is, quote, peace in the Middle East, oil prices drop, right? Russia can't really compete with the oil prices. So there's nothing really monetarily for them to gain with this peace treaty. So he doesn't really have, like, a reason to agree to it.
Which is why I think Frank is so adamant about making sure that he finds out what it is that Petrov wants, and what is his Achilles heel in these negotiations or in this interaction, because I don't know that they're negotiating necessarily yet. But I think that's what appeals to him. It's like the numbers are there, or I guess in this case the numbers aren't there, but there's a reason why, like you said, he flew out. It's not an easy trip to come from Russia to the United States. I don't imagine.
Yeah, don't you guys think it's kind of funny that we have Russia is the bad guys? It seems so Cold War and, like, old school American television that we're having, like, the Ruskies be, like, the bad guys.
Yeah, I know.
It seems kind of funny, but, yeah.
Yeah, but as soon as...
And also, really cool framing here. I want to talk to you about cinematography. Really, okay. Really, really
I'm
cool
excited.
Stuff.
I love that.
We had Petrov huge in these scenes, and we had Frank little... It was very Orwellian or whatever, and I was just like, I bet Autumn was just freaking out about that.
Oh, you know me already. It's crazy. No, I definitely took notice to that. I was sitting there going, ooh, that was purposeful. That was very...
Right.
Ooh, that was that
we've
was
got, like,
very
Frank
wrong.
In like his armpit or something like that.
Yeah, I saw that. I definitely noticed that. I noticed that a lot in in Petrov and Claire's interaction at dinner, more so than any other point in this episode. Like they
the
were definitely
too.
Like, and the stairwell too. They were definitely shooting up to make him seem, you know, more grand than
the upper hand.
Yeah,
as well,
for sure.
And let's not forget that the second that Frank knows what he wants, the closer he is, or so he thinks, to achieving what he wants. So ultimately, all of this kind of goes back to how can he push his agenda so he can more than likely run for office later. Mm. So like everything that he does to me, I always think of it as, okay, how does this relate back to what he wants? How does it relate back to what he wants? Because pretty much nothing he does up until this point is for...
is selfless.
Yeah, it's for the good of the community, for the good of the country, for the good of the nation. It's much more for the good, for peace. This is for peace. We need peace. Mm-hmm. Oh, do you really need peace, or do you just need Amworks to get through so you can get reelected?
Yeah. Yeah. There's always something. Okay. So Petrov says he's going to go sleep on it, whatever. It's because the dinner's later on that night, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we cut to Claire and Catherine. They're meeting with the Russian ambassador. And, again, they keep on referring to Frank as your husband. And she finally stops them and says, listen, guys, you need to start referring to him as Mr. President. Talk to Catherine about whatever you want to talk about. Secretary Durant. Is that it for that sort of, like, that meeting part? Am I missing anything there?
Well, that was just when, I think a little bit before then, Claire was saying, you know, I'm trying to defer to her without coming off patronizing.
Right.
And I think that was the interaction we had seen after that. So it was just watching more of Claire trying to, you know, be inclusive.
Yeah. I'm going to stop right here for a second just to remind you guys to go onto iTunes and rate our show. Give us 5 stars. Comment. Leave us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you. It also helps us bring you guys 100 hours or so of free podcast on a weekly basis. It keeps our doors open here at AfterBuzz, so please rate us. And also go onto iTunes and leave us comments on there. We read them from last week. We appreciate them. Some were very interesting. But keep going on that as well. So thank you. Gavin, the FBI dude.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's still in the mix. What's going on with him?
Yeah, weird. This whole thing is so weird. I mean, he's really, really going out on a limb for Doug to track down Rachel. It seems like a huge risk.
I think he's feeling like he had, not that he has no choice, but what Doug is offering him, ultimately, which is to be able to get him out.
To leave the country.
To leave the country, is worth finding Rachel, which, by the way, the thing that upsets me more than anything is less Gavin and more, what's Doug, stop with Rachel. She's just not that into you.
Yeah.
I just can't. It's getting to the point where it's really upsetting.
It is.
I mean, it was upsetting before, but
it's both, though. It's the fact that he's obsessed with her, and I think it's also the fact that he really wants to make sure, for Frank's sake, mm-hmm. that she's silenced once and for good, and that way he can bring, that's another kind of little mouse he can bring back to Frank to kind of weasel his way back into his, you know, permanent good graces.
Right.
But, I mean, also the obsessive thing, too.
There's so many, I think the reason they're focusing on Stamper a lot this season is because they have to be leading to something big.
Oh,
definitely. Yeah. They wouldn't spend so much time writing on him. They would be focusing much more on Claire and Frank if it wasn't that he is a key to some lock somewhere down the line.
Okay, good. I'd like it a lot more.
He better be.
Yeah, he better be.
Yeah, I like his character a lot. I like his character a lot because he's so evil. I don't know. I think there are so many like just morally corrupt people, but he does it so well. They wrote him so well in that regard, and I am interested in seeing what, because I do agree with you. There is something that's coming. I'm interested in seeing what that something is.
Yeah, I like that Doug owns it, too. He doesn't pretend.
He doesn't care.
He's not like, oh, this is for the American people.
No.
It's just like,
absolutely not. Get me power now. Get me more of it. No amount of power is enough.
Not even power. Just like, give me this very specific things that I want. Like, mm-hmm. give me the names for Rachel. Give me what I can do to please my love.
My loves.
So the dinner begins. Everybody's posing for photos with Petrov and Frank. And then we have the Pussy Riot group come up, and
oh, so fun.
We see that something's kind of building with that.
So interesting that they used the real
Pussy Riot.
Was it the actual names? Because I think I looked it up later on, too,
I thought it was the actual
names.
Interesting they kind of crossed those lines.
And we see right before they get seated, Frank says to move, because Bob was originally supposed to be sitting right next to him, and he knows that he's not going to get far with the whole Amworks discussion for the night. So you literally see a guy go in and grab his name card and move him across the table.
That.
I'm like, ha-ha. So they get up and make speeches for before dinner, and Petrov gives a shout-out to Pussy Riot, and they get up and totally bash him.
They get up in the middle of the dinner and just go on this whole diatribe of how this man is just, like, the worst kind of leader for humankind, and he should be brought up on charges, potentially. And it's just an epic meltdown at a dinner that's supposed to be, like, this.
Yeah, and he kind of tries to calm him down. Like, sit down, have vodka, be Russian.
And they're having it at all.
That was fine.
What's really interesting is this is the first time that I can recall where they directly reference not only real, like we brought up real names, but I think that that is very, very deliberate because I think that they're trying to make it purposefully relevant.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it's the first time that they've really kind of pointed fingers. Like, you know what I mean? It's the first, the whole show is a political commentary, but this is the first specific
literal
kind of
to
bring up Pussy Riot is and to not even try to hide it by covering you know
giving it a different name
but it's obviously Pussy Riot to actually insert her into the show is more in my opinion than just how do we make the show more realistic because they don't do that in the past. To me, this is a very deliberate plant.
It's ripped from the headline specifically within the context of the narrative. Like, they are there to protest the Russian president's whatever it is that they feel as though the Russian president is doing wrong. I mean, that is a parallel to the real Pussy Riot.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And the real president of Russia. So.
Oh, and don't forget that we have, what's his name, in jail, by the way.
Michael Kerrigan?
Kerrigan.
Has that happened yet?
Has it not?
I don't know.
I thought that happened at the beginning of the episode.
Oh. Is that episode 4?
We'll get to it when we get to it.
That didn't happen. Just forget.
Spoiler alert.
I'm trying to be very careful because I did binge watch the whole
Me too.
Thing.
I had to.
I just couldn't. This is one of those shows.
And I didn't binge. And I'm the one who did the freaking spoiler.
It's next. This is not
It's okay. I try to watch the episodes before I come, like the specific episode that we're discussing once before, but it's hard.
It'll give you a better understanding because it's one of those shows where if you blink, you miss a detail.
Oh, yeah.
You miss a look, you miss something.
Absolutely.
So watching it twice is actually pretty,
Twice is nice.
Twice is nice.
Three times, maybe too many times.
So Petrov comes out with this expensive, solid gold bottle of vodka and he has everybody start taking shots. And it's like the first
college
one,
party, jeez.
Yeah. And the first one, I was like, okay, they're going with it. Then the second, then the third, I was like, oh boy.
Do we know how many shots total it was?
I thought there were three.
Was it three? It felt like a lot.
It was three with an ellipses after that.
We don't have three ellipses, and they had been drinking before.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And so Claire, this is the part where I'm sure Autumn you loved. Yeah. She gets up and goes to Petrov and his little pickle. I lost it.
Oh, I'm just gonna bring attention to that dress for a second.
Yeah,
that silver dress, which was the
steel, liquid steel.
Oh my beautiful. God! And her body in that dress. It was just a magnet. She is. What a diva. It was
fabulous. You are the heart eyes emoji whenever you talk.
It's just like fashion and her sophistication and her strength.
And her fierce haircut.
And her fierce haircut, which I cut my hair. It wasn't because of Claire. That'd be shorter. That'd be a little too much. But as characters are concerned, I think that she is such a fascinating one, especially from a female perspective, to have someone that badass behind Frank just makes perfect sense to
Yes.
me. So that, and her wardrobe is just way too fabulous for words. So I just wanted to
definitely
point out.
Think the dress deserved a nod.
Yes, totally.
I'm glad we saluted it.
And after dinner, they go on to play There's a piano player. They start singing. Frank had a great voice.
But even this was so tense, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like this was supposed to be fun, and it felt like creepy and weird. I was like super uncomfortable this whole scene.
Yeah.
Absolutely my favorite scene because it's. I feel like it was the most tense. There's a part there where Petrov takes Claire and just like plants one on her lips, and we're just like, whoa!
And what Frank's reaction, where he stops mid clap, it was so great.
And yeah. Again, like, man, I don't know that I could make a terrible president because I'd go based on emotion, but man, it's just so tense and so.
Well, what did he say later? He said that whole thing where like I would push him down the staircase and like watch him burn, watch his body burn, if it didn't start World War III.
My gosh! And it was. Would you guys know what the song he was singing before he did that? It was some kind of Russian folk song. I was wondering if there was any significance that we needed. I feel like you guys are all fluent in Russian.
No.
I'm in the wrong place.
I am Russian. I'm Russian and Greek, but I do not speak either of those languages.
When it's subtitled.
Okay, yeah, when it's subtitled, yeah.
That's when I can speak it, I can say it, and understand it, and everything.
So the kiss happens, then the party ends. Everybody kind of goes their separate ways. Mm-hmm. Frank and Petrov, they go down to smoke a Cuban cigar and talk a little bit more.
And this was the craziest cinematography we saw the whole show. It was so dark, and it was just like
very noir.
Confined space too to be able to do those camera maneuvering. Those camera angles are really impressive.
Yes. Who was the director of this? Was Tucker Gates? I think he did a really, really, really good job.
Beautiful, really, really beautiful.
Shout out to Tucker.
What's
up?
So Petrov says that he wants the European missile defense system pulled, right?
I thought he wanted it just all for. I thought he wanted complete control over it.
I thought that it was a. I'm trying. You've seen it twice. Please get. What were the specifics? What I recall.
I think he wanted it pulled.
Thought he wanted it pulled.
Yeah, he wants it to be shut down. He says Frank says that there's no way because in case North Korea or Iran decide to attack, they need something there.
Right. Well, it's their European defense.
So then he goes back and says, well, maybe later on he says we'll pull Czech and maybe Poland, and that's still not enough for Petrov.
Right. And he said the other thing was you can't make it public.
Yes.
If you think
Petrov
about it,
wanted him to go public, right?
Petrov wanted him to go public because he wanted to have
it in cement, hold him to it.
Yeah, he also wanted to have something to say when he went back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, this is what we got done.
Yeah.
But then he had that whole conversation about what's called. The cars, the Lexus.
Oh, yeah.
Was it the Lada?
The Lada versus the Lexus.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's like, you gave me the Lada.
She does know Russian,
so you're offering me, or you're trying to sell me, or you're telling me you're selling me a Lexus when really you're selling me a Lada or something.
But the part where, when they're back in the basement and he puts his cigar out on the White House wall. It's like, you... Again.
It's the audacity of this man.
He took out Frank's hand and just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Balls on him, though.
Oh, yeah.
He's very gutsy. But then again, he's the Russian leader. He has to be. It's cold there, guys.
Yeah. It's real cold. If you're not strong in Russia as a leader,
in Russia, period, you probably will... You'll die. It's cold.
Yeah.
It's really freaking cold.
Yeah, it's not the same. I mean, we kind of alluded to it a little bit.
Like you're in sunny California.
Right.
I know.
Easy breezy, but we kind of alluded to it a little bit in their interaction, their dynamic, where Petrov says, you know, American presidents come and go. Like, I have to stay, because if I don't... Like, if I'm not strong in my convictions, like, I'm out of here, and then another guy comes in and, you know... undoes all of the years of work that I've put in. You know, it doesn't work the same way. And so it's interesting to see that play out in that way in the kind of the subtleties of their dynamic and their interaction. Because you definitely see it. Like, Petrov is a strong-willed guy who kind of, he's like a bull in the china shop. Like, he just goes and does what he wants. And Frank is definitely an American.
And he just, like, oozes this, like, capitalistic, like, sensibility. Like, everything is, like, so superfluous and, like, yeah. so, like, yeah. you know, and I think that's the exact kind of, we're supposed to look at that and think, like, you know, this is not the kind of guy that we want to, mm-hmm. You know, come to terms with and, mm-hmm. you know, make a deal with or anything like that. And I think that they did a really good job of showing that, the champagne and, like, the vodka, and the Lexus and all that.
Yeah. And while all of this is happening downstairs, Claire and Catherine are doing
beer pong. Did you guys, like, weren't surprised? I was like, they played beer pong when Kathy was in college?
And she was the champion.
I feel like beer pong has been around for a while.
I guess it has, but I was just like, whoa. And I was like, she's like, oh, you went to Tulane? And she's like, that's what they tell me. And I was like, hammered the whole time.
Not even surprised.
So I already love Kathy like 10 times more now. She's
awesome. There's another layer that was peeled, because she has this kind of, like, this stoic disposition where you don't really know where... She's hard to read, so it was great to see that interaction and see a different side of Catherine. It was good to see that.
It was nice to see a kind of brighter side of both of them.
Of both of them, yeah.
Because, I mean, Claire had a line... was it next episode or this one? It's not a spoiler anyway, but she says to Frank, "It's so nice to hear you laugh at some point." And the reason that's significant is because things have been tense recently. I mean, when you're the president, it's hard, guys. It's hard being the president, I'm sure.
Take it from
her. I've been directly told it's very hard. But they very much, I think, paint a very good picture of that. So it was nice to kind of have a relief from all of this tension and all of this kind of pressure by seeing two people have a good time in the White House and showing it. I mean, even with the singing, even though that was tense, it was nice to see a more human side. Mm-hmm. Because everything is so, it's all discourse, it's all politics, so it's nice to see, even when it is in the midst of all of this propaganda and kind of backhanding politics, it's nice to see them still be people and not just...
Something else that I've kind of enjoyed, I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but, like, it's nice to be president. Like, it's, like, little perks, like, they're where they sleep, and, like, you know, getting brought drinks, and, like, they were having, like, the boiled nuts and, like, everything like that.
And having
just, like,
a jet.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff. And so I'm kind of, like, I'm really enjoying, like, because they're not really pushing that on you. You know, they're not, like, making that to the forefront, but I'm kind of, like, vicariously enjoying the luxuries through them. I think that's really, really fun that they're not, you know, shoving it so much in your face.
Yeah, you just notice that Claire has a magnificent dress on. Yeah. And I think that's just good taste.
Yeah.
But they do have all of the little perks, like a jet. It's the little things.
Just the little things in life that I want.
Should we take the Lexus or the jet?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we want to make it a road trip across our beautiful nation, or do we just want to get there really quick?
Now, Claire is... Does she have a motive behind this whole beer pong thing? No, she wants to kind of get close to Catherine. She wants
to boost morale.
Okay. Did she... Because I know she mentioned something about, you know, that if we do this, Israel and Palestine are going to feel alienated. Do you feel like she had more to that beer pong thing? Like,
yes. I think the same thing that we were talking about before.
Yeah.
I think it's just... I think she is trying to build an allegiance with her and a friendship. And I also think that, like... I don't know. Because when I look at Kathy, I'm like, this is a woman who has some answers. And I think probably Claire looks at her the same way.
Right. Absolutely. I definitely think that there are a number of things at play. Of course that there was more to it than just like, oh, let's hang out. But I think that it does come from a place of wanting to get closer to Kathy for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
One, because it's nice to be close with someone. And two, because I think she does look to Kathy, who is... no spring chicken in the White House, and to the, you know what I mean? She's very experienced and very strong woman who knows what she's talking about. So I'm sure Claire looks to her for guidance and to confirm her own suspicions. Also that Petrov is not to be trusted, which we see them talking about. So I think she needs another, she needs a confidant as well to kind of bounce these ideas off of, and a support system, because they are in ways a team.
Right.
So they kind of need each other for the sake of, you know, if they want to move things forward. And then obviously Claire talks to Frank later saying, listen, I don't think you should, he's a thug. That's what she says. He's a thug.
Yeah,
he's smart. But he's a thug.
Yep.
Yeah, when she's going to bed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, so he wakes up, he's hungover, he's putting eye drops in his eyes, mm-hmm. and Seth says to put, like, a raw egg and tomato juice and drink that.
What? Has anyone done that?
I'd rather stay
hungover. Let us know if that works, guys.
Does that work? Rather stay hungover.
Right? A little bit. I don't know.
I don't know if that would make me feel worse, I feel like.
Ew, a raw egg. Just think about that.
Tell us if that works, guys.
Yes, please.
And if it's worth it.
No, don't try it.
And make a video.
No, don't try that at home. Do not do it. Don't tell us if it works. It doesn't work, probably. That's so gross.
Oh, no. And you're going to get salmonella.
Yeah. After the whole Lotta Lexus conversation, Frank says, you know, I'm going to actually sleep on this, and I'll let you know what I feel. Mm-hmm. And,
doesn't he send him packing after that?
Yeah.
No, that he doesn't sleep on that one. He says, I'll tell them to bring your car around.
Oh, that's right. Because he's expecting the joint conference, press mm-hmm. conference.
Right. Yes, and he goes, what about the conference? He says, you know what, I'll do it by myself.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Yeah.
Okay, bye, thanks for coming.
And I feel like that was the first time in the episode that we actually saw Frank...
I just said bye.
And I just imagine Kevin Spacey saying bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia. I can't even do the accent, but I just imagine him in the southern accent. Bye, Felicia.
But we see Frank for the first time actually being leveled with Petrov at that moment, you know, because the whole episode he's kind of getting these jabs left and right.
Yeah.
And this time we actually see him like the ball was in his court. So he's like, nope, bye. We're going to, you know, do my own press conference. And that part was freaking awesome when he's about to go on and there was the Russian flag and they come and remove it and they put the American flag, you know, next to it. I was like, dang!
I think it's kind of weird. I think Frank's reason for not going with Claire's plan when he first heard it was, like, maybe a little thin. Mm-hmm. Like, because he had this whole plan and then, like, I think Claire and Kathy came in with, like, you know, a much better one, albeit maybe a little bit more pushy.
Yeah.
And maybe more risky. But I thought it was weird that Frank, that his only reason to not go with that plan was because, like, I spent so much time on this.
I think it was more so than that. I think he didn't want to, he didn't want anything to push things in a direction that wasn't beneficial to the MO.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so any little thing that may come off as aggressive or pushy, he didn't even want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, I think it just lowered the stakes for me a little bit when I knew that there was another option, like, the whole episode. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with you. I think, I think it did lower it a little bit. I also think he's in his mind, he's juggling all of these different things and situations and, like, alternatives to scenarios and what could go wrong, and he's just being a president in that way. Like, He's afraid of having anything go wrong.
Okay.
I think that was also just his initial reaction. Like, he's been... Because We knew about this plan the whole episode,
right.
But this is the first time he's hearing this alternative. And like anything, when you are, you know, when you're going one way and someone says, go another way, your initial instinct is normally to go, wait, why? Like, what are we doing? So I think that was just kind of his initial
reaction.
Again,
like, but did anybody think that the episode was going to end, like, amicably between the two?
I
think that's why it was kind of hard for me, because I knew that, like... I kind of, the whole episode, I knew that Frank's plan was probably not going to work. And so that's kind of maybe made it, like, a little less suspenseful. That's all.
Yeah, I understand. What I did not anticipate, though, or I guess it's not that I didn't anticipate it more than, like, it wasn't a big shock, I guess, but I just, there was no way for me to know, I guess, was how he kind of was leveled at the end of it, where I didn't know how long this negotiation was going to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't know where it was going to end up at the episode. At the end of it, and for him to basically say, to send him packing and to face the press alone.
That was a bold move.
Yeah, it was bold. And kind of going along with, frankly, this new image that he's created for himself.
Yeah.
With the transparency, and he gives this whole speech about how, like, listen, this is what we were going to do, and we were going to be allies, but, like, it was brought to my attention during the talk that when these people criticized,
He mentions the Pussy Riot.
He mentions Pussy Riot.
And he uses the Pussy Riot in to his advantage here at the end.
Yeah, and he talks about peace, and we need peace at any cost. And all
and the peace should not be bought. It should be a reward in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly, which is totally going... So even though this wasn't his initial plan, ultimately it completely goes along with the image that he's trying to create for himself, which is this transparent... guy who comes out and talks about everything that's going on behind closed doors. Yeah. Is that true necessarily? No.
It was super convenient, though. It was a super convenient outcome for Frank.
Also, I had this thought. Have you guys seen Love Actually?
Yeah.
This reminded me of a part in Love Actually, and then I went onto a blog and somebody else thought this too,
really?
So I was really excited that it reminded me of the part at the end when Hugh Grant was like, you know, oh, like, our relationship is no longer friendly because, like, Billy Bob Thornton, like, put a move on that girl.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen the movie in a long time.
And then I went on to, like, a blog just to read, like, a review. Sorry, just to read a review, and they said the exact same thing. I'm like, I'm so happy I'm not the only person who thought that.
Very, very different vibe, I have to say.
Exactly, but, like, so, like, I don't know why, but I'm so happy I wasn't alone.
Is that another one on Netflix? I'll probably have to watch that.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
No, it's a Christmas movie. You got to wait a couple months.
All
right, guys, I think that's our episode. Where can the people find you guys, Quinn?
The people can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillion. You can find me on Instagram at Quinstagram, and you can find me on Vine at the Quinn Bee.
I love that pun, the Quinstagram. That's awesome. You can find me at Julian Dujarric. It's less punny. across the board on all social media, Twitter, Instagram, all of it.
I am on Twitter and I am on Instagram at Autumn Chiklis. I keep it nice and simple, and also my name doesn't work. That kind of little button.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Pegarod. Thank you so much for watching. Tune in next time. Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.